Magkasunod na pag-aaral sa kasaysayan yung ating ginawa this months of March and April. Last March, tinignan natin yung 350th anniversary ng tinatawag na The Great Ejection. And this month, we are looking at the 450th anniversary of what is known as the massacre of the French Protestants who were called Huguenots. Kadahilan ng pag-aaral natin ito ay upang makita natin na yung paninindigan sa pananampalataya ay hindi isang bagay na we simply talk about, we simply theorize. This is something that happened in the past and may happen in our present life. At kaya sa pag-aaral natin ng mga pinagdaanan ng mga nakalipas na Kristiyano, sana may matutuhan tayo pagdating sa usapin ng paninindigan sa pananampalataya. And that's what we began doing last Sunday. We looked at the French Reformation. At sinabi ko nga, sa French Reformation, hindi ito kasing bantog ng Reformation sa Germany na pinangunahan ni Martin Luther, or even Reformation in Switzerland na pinangunahan ni Ulrich Zwingli, or English Reformation. Ang dahilan ay sapagkat France remained predominantly Roman Catholic, and at the same time, ang titingnan natin ngayon ay because of the Protestants of France suffered severe persecution na hindi nangyari sa ibang mga bansa. Kumbaga, naging malaya yung reformasyon, yung kilusan ng reformasyon sa Germany, Switzerland at iba pa. Bagamat may mga pag-uusig din, hindi kasing tindi na nangyari dito sa French Reformation. Yet, still, there were stories of the power of the gospel sa panahon na yun. There were reformers inside the Catholic Church, like we saw last Sunday in the person of Jacques Lefebvre and also William Brissonnet. Sila yung mga pari doon sa loob ng simbahan, pero nagsimula ng mangaral nung bago pa narinig kay Martin Luther, ipinangaral na ni Lefebvre yung justification by faith. That's before the posting of the 95 Theses which spawned the Reformation, and also Brissonnet. At pero pagdating sa French reformers, no one excels. The reformer par excellence ay walang iba kundi si John Calvin. Hindi lang siya ginamit sa France. In fact, ang nakita nga natin, kinailangan niyang tumakas sa France dahil nga sa pag-uusig. Pero dahil doon ay kinasangkapan siya ng Panginoon ng pangmundo. Hanggang ngayon, siya ay ginagamit pa rin patuloy sa kanyang mga isinulat. So what we are saying is that despite the severe persecution, yet the power of the gospel surfaced. Nangibabaw pa rin sa iba't ibang pagkakataon yung kapangyarihan ng Ebanghelyo. Ngayon ay titingnan natin ang katotohanan ng pag-uusig na nangyari sa France. At ang titingnan natin is the persecution of the Protestant reformers in France who were called the Huguenots. May nagsabi, Huguenot what? Huguenots, although Americans pronounce it as Huguenots, in British as well as in French, it's Huguenots, so gagamitin ko yung ganong pronunciation. It's not certain ano talagang pinanggalingan itong Huguenot na pangalan ng mga French Protestants. Tatlong teorya. The first theory is that this is from the German Eidgenossen, which means oath fellows. So kumbaga, they were people who followed an oath together in times of suffering at galing sa German term. Another theory is one of their leader was Besancon, huge, at maaaring sa kanya rin kinuha yung pagkatawagang Huguenots. But a certain scholar, Janet Gray, who has done a lot of research into the history of the Huguenots, has given what probably is the most plausible theory. Maaaring ito ang pinakamagandang paliwanag sa theory number 3. Merong spirit noon na ang pangalan ay King Hugon, associated with one of the city's gates in Paris, where Protestants held illegal assemblies. Dahil na-associate sila sa gate na yon, tinawag sila ng kanilang mga kalaban based on that spirit who was associated with that gate, their illegal assemblies were therefore called Huguenot assemblies. So, alin man dyan ay maaring may lehitimong paliwanag, pero no certain origin ng katawagang Huguenots. Pero ang nakita na nga natin, yung mga ginamit ng mga reformers, reviewin lang natin, si Jacques Lefauve ay pari pero nangaral na ng justification by faith some 5 years before Martin Luther posted his 95 theses. Then you have a bishop in William Brissonnet na naging reformer din sa kanyang parish, sa kanyang nasasakupan. But without doubt, the most important reformer was John Calvin, whose influence was felt not just in France but throughout Europe and of course, since then, throughout the world. Yan si John Calvin sa pamagitan ng kanyang mga isinulat, lalo't higit ang kanyang The Institutes of the Christian Religion ay ginamit ng Panginoon. Pero tayo ay nag-aaral tungkol sa France. Yan ang France, lumilindol. Yung France ay nasa ibaba lang ng England, ang nasa ibaba ng France ang Spain at Portugal. So, yan ang pinag-iinuga ng ating pag-aaral ngayon. France, persecution. What were the reasons for the persecution? Bakit naging matindi ang pag-uusig dito sa France? There are two major reasons that I want us to consider. The first is the Catholic fanaticism of the royals. Yung mga nasa royalty, yung mga nagahari, mga naging panatiko sa kanilang pagiging Catholic. At isa na riyan ay Francis I, ang kanyang anglicized name, si Francois sa French. Now, he reigned from 1515 to 1547. Mahaba yun. At kung papansin ninyo, hari siya ng 1515, ang Reformation nagsimula ng 1517. Kaya nag-coincide siya sa panahon, sa mga taon ng Reformation, napilitan siyang tumugon sa pagkakalat ng Reformation kasama na sa Francia. So his reign coincided with the Reformation period. At first, Francois was quite tolerant dahil may mga kaibigan siyang Huguenot na nasa nobility, hindi naman siya agad naging taga-usig ng mga Huguenots. But some influences began to exert themselves on Francois, and one of the most important influences was Pope Clement VII. Pope Clement VII was Pope from 1523 to 1534, at siya yung naging masigasig, masugid, na nag-impluensya kay Francois na huwag itolerate ang mga Protestants. Remember, these were times when religion was believed to be the defining feature of any society. Ito yung paniniwala noon na kapag umiba ka ng reliyon, para kang tumatraidor sa lipunan. Sa panahon natin, parang nakakabigla yung ganyang paniniwala. Tayo, meron ng kalayaan kung anong reliyon ang piliin mo, pero ilagay mo yung sarili mo sa 16th na siglo, 16th century and before that. The belief was, if you differ with the religion of society, you are being against that society. And the wrath of God will fall upon that society. Kaya ang nagiging patakaran madalas noon ay huwag hayaan na magkaroon ng non-conformist, yung mga hindi sumasang-ayon sa relihiyon ng mga nagaharing uri. So ganyan yung mga paniniwala noon. So there was Pope Clement VII who influenced Francois from a policy of toleration to a more severe policy which led to persecution. And they had this famous meeting. Yan ang painting ng meeting ni Francois at ni Pope Clement when they met in Marseille. That was in 1533. At dyan na nagkaroon ng mga negosasyon. At dyan namilit at inimpluwensyahan ng husto ni Pope Clement VII. Itong si Francois na maging mapanupil sa mga hindi sumasang-ayon sa pananampalatayang Katoliko. And so as a result of that, as well as other events na nangyari, yan si Francois issued the edict of Fontainebleau, which ginawa ng batas ang pag-uusig. Si Francois ay sinundan ng kanyang anak na si Henry II, and Henry II, who reigned from 1547 to 1559, became even more personal. Mas naging personal yung kahigpitan nitong si Henry II. He issued the edict of Chateaubriand directing civil and church courts to persecute the Huguenots. So mula kay Francois ay yung kanyang anak Henry II ay mas naging patindi ng patindi yung pag-uusig. In fact, itong si Henry II ay may mga pinapatay siya ng mga ministers. Not only that, sa kalupitan niya, bago sila pinapapatay, pinapuputulan muna ng dila kasi yung akusasyon nga sa kanila ay preaching heresies. So you used your tongue to preach heresy, kaya pinuputol ang dila nila at bago ipapatay. So makikita natin yung kalupitan dito ni Henry II. Now, yung pumalit kay Henry II, yung anak niya ay hindi naman agad namatay dahil mas nasakitin, at ang pumalit sa kanya ay kapatid na si Charles IX. But at the point that Charles IX succeeded, he was only a minor, I think 10 years old. So ang talagang naging power sa likuran niya ay yung kanyang nanay, Catherine de' Medici. This was the real power behind her son Charles IX. Now, itong de' Medici clan, napakabantog na clan ito sa Europa. Napaka makapangyarihan. Nabanggit ko kanina si Pope Clement VII. Alam niyo, mga papa, nagpapalit ng pangalan yan. Alam niyo ba kung kailan nagsimula yung pagpapalit ng pangalan? Kasi nung, I think, 4th century, may isang papa na ang pangalan ay Mercury. Eh, mahirap na pagganong pangalan ng ilagay sa papa. So, simula noon, lagi nang nagpapalit ng pangalan ng mga papa. So, itong si Pope Clement VII, pangalan lang na ipinalit yan. Alam niyo, ang tunay niyang pangalan ay Giulio di Giuliano de' Medici. So, de' Medici, itong si Pope Clement VII at yung de' Medici clan, napakamalakas na kapangyarihan yan sa buong Europa. Now, Catherine de' Medici was the real power behind her son, Charles IX, and she pursued a lot of persecutorial plans, schemes against the Huguenots. In fact, pag-aaralan natin to next week, she is believed to have been the mastermind behind the massacre of the Huguenots. Yung pag-aaralan nating massacre, mamaya meron ng massacre, pero next week, yung talagang malawakang massacre na libo-libo ang namatay, pinaniniwalaan ng nasa likuran niyan ay itong babae na to, si Catherine de Medici. Now, that's the first reason for the persecution. Matindi sa kanilang pananampalatayang Katoliko ang mga royals noon, at dahil sila ang nasa kapangyarihan, ay tamang-tama yung mensahe kanina. Ginagamit yung kapangyarihan para usigin yung mga mananampalataya. But, to be fair to history, I must also explain that the reason why there was such a severe persecution was the imprudent provocation by the Protestants. May mga ginawa rin kalokohan itong mga Protestante na naging dahilan para udyukan ang mga nasa kapangyarihan na sila'y usigin. Ito'y pinangungunahan ng isa sa mga leader nila, Louis de Condé. He was the acting head of the powerful Bourbon family, and de Condé was known for his intemperate personality. Ang tawag sa kanya nung isang contemporary, he was unrestrained fire and fury. At kapag merong ganyan, kahit pa totoo ang pananampalataya, mag-ingat tayo. When a person is all fire and fury, gagawa ng kapinsalaan yan. Ayan ang nangyari kay de Condé. his reckless actions put Protestant Calvinists in political trouble. Isang nangyari ay yung tinatawag sa technical term na iconoclasm. Ano yung iconoclasm? Icon is yung imahin at binabasag. Nangyari yun ng 1528. Nagbasag sila ng mga imahin ng para sa mga Katoliko ay Blessed Virgin, and that was simply imprudent. That was so foolish. Eh, siyempre na maraming na-offend sa ginawa nilang yon ng pagbabasag ng mga imahin. May mga nakikilala akong minsan, pag sila'y naging mananampalataya na, pag uwi nila ng bahay, pinagbabasag yung imahin ng kanilang mga tatay at nanay. Eh, napaka mangmang na gawain yun. Huwag nating gagawin yun. That is not the way to be winsome sa ating mga hinihikayat. But more than the iconoclasm, something happened on October 17, 1534, which we can say was the real turning point. It's known in French history as the Affaire des Placards. Affair of the Placards. Yung ginawa, nagising yung mga French, October 17, 1534, nagkalat ng mga posters ang mga Protestants sa mga pader ng Paris at iba pa mga major cities ng France na kanilang nilalapastangan ang misa at ang iba pang mga Catholic sacraments. So, ikaw, di ba sabi nila, magbiro ka na sa lasing, huwag sa bagong gising. Ikinalat nila ng gabi. Kaya pagkagising ng mga French, nabasa na nila itong mga posters na ito. Hindi lang yon, pati mismo sa tulugan ng hari ni François, nagising siya na mayroong poster sa kanyang silid, which means this was a breach of security, and this became a real turning point. Inatake yung misa, which of course to the Catholics would be a kind of blasphemy. At yun ang naging dahilan para magkaroon ng turning point sa patakaran ng mga royals at pati na rin sa mga nasa ordinaryong mga mamamayan. Ang nanguna rito ay si Antoine de Marcourt, a pastor from Picardy. So sa kanyang pag-aakala na ito ay zeal for the Lord, hindi lang nangyari na October 17, sinundan pa niya yan ng paglalathala ng mga broadsheet na again patuloy na inaatake yung mga sakramento ng simbahang Katoliko. So anti-Catholic posters appeared in Paris, major places, and this erupted into a terrible scandal. At doon nagkaroon ng turning point. The royals, who up to this point were still exercising some restraint and toleration, even though meron na rin pag-uusig, talagang nagkaroon na ng sudden change, a radical turning point as a result of this. And so from this time on, persecution multiplied many times, manifold. As a result of the affair of the placards, immediately there was the burning at the stake of 24 Huguenots. So, 24 agad ang kanilang pinasunog. Yung burning at the stake, ayang itinatali ka sa poste at susunugin. Yan ay drawing ng burning of the at the stake of Jan Hus of Bohemia. So, that was the immediate aftermath nung affair of the placards. And then there was the massacre of Merindol in 1545. This was the killing of Protestants and Waldensians. Waldensians were followers of the Protestant Peter Waldo. And yan ang ginawa sa kanila. François ordered Jean Meunier Dupid to implement the massacre. The estimates of the fatalities range from hundreds to thousands. They destroyed 28 villages. At dito makikita nyo, inihulog sa castle yung mga Protestants. At ganyan na ang nangyari. And then, you have the case of executions, even of the, by the way, that's the monument to the massacre at Merindol. it reads in translation, in memory of the Waldensians who died for their faith. Then, even the nobles were not spared. There was the execution of Anne de Bourges. Anne de Bourges is lalaki, hindi ang babae. Siya'y pinresure na mag-recant din. He was a member of parliament, but he refused. And when he was already in the gallows, about to be burned, he said as his last words, "My friends, I am not here as a thief or a martyr, but for the gospel." So that's the execution of Anne de Bourges. And then what we are actually remembering as 450th year is the massacre of Vassy in 1562. Here, Huguenots were killed. Nangyari ito when the Duke of Guise, siya'y isang fanatical Catholic, nung sila'y naglalakbay with his troops, they chanced upon an assembly, an illegal assembly of Huguenots, about 500 of them worshiping. And Duke of Guise with his troops attacked them, and 63 were killed. And this would be one memorable incident na magkakaroon ng malakas na impact, and it is believed to be the incident that will spill over into what we will remember next week sa massacre of St. Bartholomew's Day, the massacre of the Huguenots. So yan ay yan ang may pakananyan si Francis de Guise. This is the major event that would launch the French Wars of Religion. Nangyari din 1560, the execution of Protestants in Amboise, 1560. So, anong mga naging resulta nitong mga persecution na ito? The results, well, una, the flight of the reformers. Now, dito natin makikita yung providensya ng Panginoon. John Calvin, up to this point, was determined to stay in France. He loved the French. He was, until his dying day, a French in his sentiment, in his commitment. So he wanted to stay in France. Well, isipin ninyo, what would have happened if John Calvin just stayed in France? Would he have written, for example, the Institutes? Would he have time to write the commentaries that now are benefiting so many people in ministry? Palagay ko ay hindi. So, dito natin makikita yung providensya ng Panginoon, persecution, as a result, flight of the reformers, nagsitaka sa mga reformers, and we find John Calvin ultimately landing in Geneva, at dito sa Geneva siya magiging mabisang ministro, at ang kanyang ministeryo ay kakasangkapanin ng Panginoon, hindi lamang sa Geneva, hindi lamang sa France, kundi sa buong mundo. And that was the result of the persecution that in the providence of God resulted in the flight of the reformers. And because of that, the Reformation in France also spread into Europe. Dahil yung pinagtakbuhan ng mga reformers, hindi lang naman Geneva, marami sa Inglaterra, Netherlands, ay isa ring pinagtakbuhan nila. So kumalat ang Reformation mula sa France patungo sa iba't ibang bansa, again because of the persecution. So you see the providence of God even in the instrumentality of persecution. But unfortunately, one negative effect was the wars of religion. Sa pakiramdam ng mga Huguenots, the only way to face persecution is to fight. At dahil meron silang mga sponsors ng mga nobility, meron silang kakayahan. So, ang nangyari is long years of tinatawag sa history ng France na wars of religion. Pakinggan mo pa lang, napaka hindi na angkop. Digmaan tapos relihiyon. At relihiyon ng mga nag-aangking sila yung mga Kristiyano. It was so It was so unfit to be called a religious war. Pero yan po ang nangyari at natapos lamang yan sa tinatawag na Edict of Nantes, signed in April 1598. This is one of the most important documents in history leading to a policy of religious toleration. And nung makita nila, walang manaig. Sometimes the Catholics will prevail, at other times the Huguenots will prevail. Walang manaig, so nagsawa rin sila until 1598, the Edict of Nantes became an official policy of toleration of religions in France. So this is before the First Amendment of the American Constitution. Kaya again, makikita natin yung providensya ng Panginoon. Ginamit ang mga hindi magandang pangyayari, pero nagbunga ng makikinabang tayong lahat ngayon. The Edict of Nantes will lead to more toleration in the generations to come. And here we are, the beneficiaries of these policies of toleration in the past. Lessons. What are the lessons we should learn from this persecution? Well, unang-una na, the New Testament reveals that persecution is a mark of the Church of Christ. Nabanggit ko kanina sa aking preaching, part of the Beatitudes, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you, and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. So, 2 Thessalonians 1:4, we ourselves boast about you in the churches of God for your steadfastness and faith in all your persecutions and in the afflictions that you are enduring. So the New Testament reveals that that's mark, part ng mark ng iglesyang nagpapakatapat ay uusigin. And then, persecution is provoked by the offense in the message of the gospel. Yan dapat ang maging dahilan. Kung tayo man ay inuusig, sabi ni Paul, but if I, brothers, still preach circumcision, why am I still being persecuted? In that case, the offense of the cross has been removed. So in other words, Paul is saying, kung ako man ay inuusig, ito'y dahil sa offense of the cross. Not because I'm preaching legalism. Kaya yung offense ng gospel ang dapat maging dahilan kung tayo ay iniinsulto o inuusig dahil yung mensahe. Huwag na nating dagdagan yung katitisura ng mensahe. Yun ay sapat na. Kaya hindi tayo sumasang-ayon sa ginawa ng mga Protestante sa France. So the third lesson is that offensive acts of believers are the wrong pretext of persecution. Hindi dapat yung mga maling ginagawa ng mga mananampalataya ang maging dahilan ng pag-uusig. Yan ang maliwanag na sinabi ni Pedro. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or as a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Yan ang ginawa nung sa affairs of the placards. Gumawa sila ng isang offensive act na hindi dapat na naging dahilan para ma-provoke yung mga nagaharing uri. Instead of that, I quoted Romans 12:14 kanina, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. And finally, faithfulness is most decisively tested in the intensity of persecution. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And for 10 days, you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. So that is the test of persecution. At sa kahulihan nga yung teksto dyan sa inyong handout, at the top, which is in French, ay pakibasa nga.
1 Peter 4:16. Mais si circum chrétien, qu'il n'est pas honte, qu'il glorifie Dieu de porter ce nom.
Merci, mademoiselle. Joyeux anniversaire. Ang sinasabi sa English ay, yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. And yan ang dapat nating attitude pagdating sa persecution. Stand by the word meekly but firmly when confronted with persecution. At yun sana ang isang matutuhan natin. Expect it, but we must be meek, not retaliate, but firm in our commitment to the faith. So, any question? Jean?
Pastor, yung imprudent provocation, now in the modern times, yung nangyayari, for instance, sa Malaysia na Christian groups do not share the gospel, evangelize yung mga Malays kasi bawal yun sa kanila. I was thinking na parang kasi kung merong magkakaroon na convert, the whole Christian groups, all the churches in Malaysia will suffer. So I was thinking kung yung ba ay, is it really avoiding imprudent provocation if a certain group evangelizes Malays in Malaysia?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yung context dito ay sa Malaysia, ang mga Kristiyano karamihan sa kanila ay nasa Chinese population and there is a law prohibiting converting the Malays because they are expected to be Muslims. Ngayon, ang nangyayari kuminsan ay ang nagiging palaisipan sa kanila, katapangan ba na mag-evangelize sa mga Malays na mauusig lang sila ng pamahalaan, or would it be more prudent to stay in the meantime at least among the Chinese population? I think I would follow the latter position without turning my back to opportunities of evangelizing with Malays. Ang nangyari kasi dito, to put it in context, merong isang Malay na na-convert. Alam ko yun kasi naging kaklase ko siya sa London Theological Seminary, na naging very imprudent sa mga ginawa niya na nakatawag ng atensyon ng authorities. So ang nangyari ay yung pastor ang nakulong, Pastor Po Boon Sing ng Kuala Lumpur, nakulong siya ng isang taon dahil sa pagka-convert ng isang Malay na hindi naman naging prudent. So in other words, if there is a prudent way of spreading the gospel without inviting unnecessary provocation, I think I will pursue that latter option. Kesa in fire and fury that is unrestrained, ay lalong naging malawak ang panunupil sa gawain ng Ebanghelyo. May sinabing ganyan ng Panginoon sa Matthew 24, if they persecute you in one town, proceed to the next town. So, ibig sabihin, kung maiiwasan natin yung pag-uusig, iwasan. Other questions? Myla.
Pastor, ito bang masakit na leksyon na to, yung number 3, ay natutunan ba nila nung time nila or ito lang ay nakita ng mga tao after these years?
Well, the generations that followed learned from these mistakes ng mga ninuno nila. Pero yung panahong ito ay dumating na lang sa Edict of Nantes, ibig sabihin nagkasawaan na. Hindi dahil sa nakita nila yung prinsipyo, nung panahong yun ay talagang inakala nila the only way to maintain the Huguenot's cause was to fight back. At yun nga ang nangyari. Sometimes the Huguenots will prevail, sometimes the Catholics will prevail, hanggang sa dumating yung 1598. Remember, nagsimula ito ng 1563 as a result of the massacre of Vassy of 1562. So from 1563 to 1598, sunod-sunod ang mga civil war yan sa France. Now, sa atin siguro, hindi tayo magre-resulta sa gera, pero there are ways in which we do something offensive in retaliation of persecution. At hindi yun ang dapat. Hindi yun ang dapat natin gawin.
Comment lang po dun sa ano po ninyo. Actually po, natuwa po ako kasi ang position po ng church regarding Catholics ay yung sinabi niyo po. Kasi actually, for several years na naghahanap ako ng church, nangangapa ako. Ilang churches po yung nag-invite sa akin na pumunta ako at akala ko yun na. Pero nag-back out po ako kasi hindi ko po kinaya, as Catholic po, hindi ko po kinaya yung parang persecution sa pulpit. Kasi parang nandito ako naghahanap, kailangan ko ng guidance, pero yung nadinig ko ay nasaktan po ako kasi parang ito ba yung madidinig ko? Ito ba yung aral na hinahanap ko? Actually po, honestly po, kaya po patuloy po, nagpapatuloy po ako dito sa grace dahil po yun sa position po ng church na igalang po yung paniniwala po. Kahit nataliwas po sa paniniwala po ng church, ay iginagalang nyo po yung paniniwala po ng iba. Yun po. And natutuwa po ako kasi every time po na nagdi-discuss po kayo, nagpi-preach, lumalago po yung kaalaman ko po at paniniwala ko po sa Panginoon. Yun lang po. Maraming salamat po talaga, Pastor. Kaya po, ang pakiramdam ko, hindi ako nahihiya, hindi ako nag-aalangan na mag-invite ng mga kaibigan kasi po, alam kong magiging maayos sila oras po na nakapakinig po sa mga tinuturo po natin dito sa church.
Okay, maraming salamat, Annie. At isang patakaran sa pangangaral sa iglesyang ito ay huwag gagamit ng panghahamak sa kanino man. Katuturo ko lang ng isang taon sa Grace Ministerial Academy ng subject na Roman Catholicism, and something that I emphasize again and again sa aking mga estudyante ay we can never win by contempt, and we can never be contemptuous of those views that we may even differ with, pero we can never approach it with contempt but always with sympathy and sensitivity. At sana yun ang nararamdaman ng sino man na dumadalo rito. Other questions? Myla?
Pastor, hindi ko maalala, was there ever a time after this period na kinondemn ng Catholic Church yung ginawa ng kanilang mga kasamahan dahil sa masyadong extreme na reaction?
I do not know of any official statement to the effect ng apology by the Catholic Church concerning the massacre of the Huguenots. Maybe there is. I'll research this week and I'll tell you. Kasi nagbigay naman sila ng official apology sa ibang bagay like slavery, Galileo affair. So it might be that there is an official apology. I'll research on that.